And away we go here back on the Now program, Monday, November the 4th, 2019, 15 minutes past the hour. And boy, do we have an hour for you today you're not going to want to miss. Before we get to our guests, though, I do want to remind you we will have live comprehensive election coverage tomorrow night starting at 7:15 p.m. We will not break away. We will go on the air live at 7:15 p.m. and not break away until all the elections are called. And there are a lot of local elections, mayoral race, auditor race, city council races, and a lot of levies that we are going to want to know the outcome of. We will have Linda Sims stationed at the Board of Elections. We will have Glenn Coble at Democratic Headquarters. We will have Terry Tackett at Republican Headquarters. I will be in studio with Sean Kraft, Mike Wilson, and a special guest. So don't miss that election night starting at 7:15 p.m. No breakaways right here on WWGH Radio. Now we go from the local to the national on this election eve, and we have a great guest, nobody better to talk to. He has been a great friend of this program over the years. I don't think we've had him on in quite a while, though, so it's always good to hear his very distinct and effective voice. He was a United States representative from 1971 through 2017, here to talk about the world as we know it, Representative Charles Rangel. Representative Rangel, how are you?
Good to be back talking with you. It's exciting for me just to hear you talking about elections. It's one of America's most prized possessions, but sometimes it's not fully appreciated and understood just how powerful it can be. But those people who drafted the Constitution, they brought a sense of balance in trying to project what human beings would do politically. And with the exception of how they treated the Native Americans and African slaves, they even put a plug in that by saying, in order to perfect a more perfect union. And we've been working on that, and the most effective way that I can think of is through that ballot box.
Representative,
so I really enjoy just hearing you talking about elections at your home state.
Well, Representative, this is a question. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the national elections, there has been a question that has been gnawing at people. In these local elections, in these statewide elections, do you think what's going on nationally with the president and the Speaker of the House will trickle down to the local statewide elections?
There's no question about it. The only question would be to what degree. In the recent midterm congressional elections, hardly any Democrats ran against Republicans. They ran against Trump. And in a lot of elections, there is no longer a Republican Party where the beautiful thing about having a two-party system is that you don't have to know the candidate personally. You know what principles he or she has adopted so that it's possible to say, well, that's a good Democrat, a good Republican. I'll vote for him or her. However, I think it's safe to say that Donald Trump has effectively destroyed the remnants of the party of Lincoln, and not that Nixon didn't do severe damage with his Southern strategy. But right now, a lot of people just want to know, where do you stand on Trump? And it's unfortunate because the local issues are what people have to live with from day to day. Their schools, their hospitals, how they handle crime, homelessness, economic opportunities. These are things that just going to town hall meetings and expressing yourself and knowing that you have an opportunity to have input makes you a better human being and a better American to get it off your chest and to know that comes election day you can vote for or against someone based on how they're going to treat you locally. But even though it doesn't completely rule as to whether you're for or against Trump, there's no question. Tip O'Neill once said all politics is local, but he never suspected that someone named Donald Trump would be coming along.
That being said, Representative Rangel, I just want to ask your opinion on this, a gentleman who's been in many elections as you have. In a state like Ohio, where I sit right now, that went pretty overwhelmingly for President Trump last time, who has a Republican governor, are people, in your opinion, going to be more sympathetic to President Trump about this impeachment inquiry, more sympathetic to the Democrats for having to do the impeachment inquiry, which will affect that down-ticket vote? In a state like Ohio that Trump won, will Democrats benefit tomorrow, or will Republicans, in your opinion?
Well, that's a complicated question that there is no answer, because it's how the individual evaluates the conduct of the president. There are so many people that are disappointed in the manner in which the president has attempted to represent the United States internationally. And yet, they have appealed to a raw instinct that many of us, especially those of us of color, had hoped that the Obama election had at least put to rest. But it didn't put it to rest, because Trump has been able to make a special appeal openly, overtly, and to have these people to believe that that minority rights are no longer as important as nationalism and people actually reverting to what we had in this country many, many years ago. So when you have a local election, the one thing that you cannot really evaluate is the emotion that an elected official feels when he or she is up for re-election. I am telling you, it defies any explanation as to what people are willing to rationalize in order to get reelected. And it's not always a negative or a disgraceful feeling. It's one that can't be controlled. And when people actually know that the president is wrong, but to say anything against them will bring about a retaliation that you cannot afford politically, financially, to fight back on, they either quit, as 20 Republican members, 19 or 20, rather than to fight back and say, this is wrong for America, this is wrong for my party, they just quit the fight. And if you notice, even in the Senate, we have not found any Republicans speaking against the conduct of the president that was running for re-election. So in Ohio, it's the individual that's going to basically determine the influence, if any, that Trump will have. Now, you take from the city council to the state legislature, either in the lower or the upper houses, the personal relationship that a member's had with their constituents, it's hard to shake that. But in close races, where people don't have that emotional tie to the elected official, and it could go either way, you bet your sweet life that Trumpism is going to be a factor, either pro or against. And so the answer to your question is not only not going to be resolved in Ohio, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, but even in 2020, the question is going to be, how much will American, especially Republicans and independents, tolerate in order to maintain Trump as their president? Because what it has done to us as a nation internationally, no one challenges the fact that America prestige has been severely damaged internationally. And so, but people have accepted that tragically, and they've accepted it at the expense of the love and understanding of the Constitution.
Representative Rangel, it's interesting as we look ahead to 2020, 1 year away from tomorrow, that election will take place. It will be a presidential year. I go back to 1992, and Bill Clinton, who was not the incumbent at that time, President George H.W. Bush was. President Bill Clinton had been accused of affairs. He had been accused of misdoings in Arkansas. President Bush had won the Desert War. He had something like over an 80% approval rating. And then the economy gave way. And as Bill Clinton said, it's the economy, stupid. And Bill Clinton won that election pretty handedly against the incumbent. With all this folderol going on about President Trump and everything cosmetically and impeachment and so on and so forth, if the economy stays good, lowest unemployment numbers since the 60s, does Trump still win?
It is a factor. But, you know, you just can't talk about the economy with Bill Clinton. I served in the Congress on the impeachment committee, on the Judiciary Committee, during Nixon, and the economy was good, and Nixon won by a landslide. He was a very popular president, and the nation was really torn apart between wanting to support the President of the United States and believing that he had lied under oath for a two-bit burglary that was taking place at the Watergate hotel. With Bill Clinton, many people believe that Trump probably did extort promises from the Ukrainian government, and there was a quid pro quo, and he did offer to withhold $400 million unless the Ukrainian government actually investigated the Biden son situation. And many Republicans have reached the conclusion, yes, he did it. Yes, it was a terrible thing to do, but it doesn't reach the high point in their minds that the person should be found convicted and chased out of office. So the same thing with Bill Clinton. What he had done to this intern, or with this intern, a powerful president of the United States, using the power of his office to have a young intern so attracted to him that she would lose her honor and he would so disgrace himself. Is this enough to kick the president of the United States out of office? And of course, the Senate found out it wasn't. You know, impeachment in and of itself is a very, very political instrument, and it is guided not by state statutes or federal statutes, but by language that is only interpreted by the beholder, and that is whether or not it was being a traitor, crimes and misdemeanors, and not statutory misdemeanors. And so bringing dishonor to people of the United States not only causes a problem for Americans now, but many of us who enjoy a better quality of life than our fathers, our grandfathers, whether they're slaves or other immigrants. It's because people fought for the principles. The principles. I got shot in Korea by Chinese, and it's very difficult to explain to young people what I was fighting for, because there were no Chinese running up and down my block or my neighborhood threatening my family. But I belonged to a democracy that was a leader in the United Nations, and our Constitution provided that we should do good for people and protect people. And that's what the United States and 22 other nations have done as they went to Korea in 1950. How do you measure that type of thing when you're not only protecting the Constitution for yourself, but for generations to follow? So that's the reason why I was so appreciative of you starting your program, or that is what I could hear. We're just talking about voting. You didn't say who to vote for. You didn't say what party. But you were encouraging people to understand that this was an important part of their obligation as an American citizen, to find out what the candidates are saying, what they're doing, and to make that effort to go out and vote. So whether it's Ohio, Mississippi, Louisiana, Kentucky, it takes all of these different diverse people to make up what is the great United States of America. And this diversity used to make us very different from other countries that did not have an opportunity to know, much less to enjoy, democratic principles. I'm afraid a lot of countries don't look at us today as beacon of that democracy. And that's unfortunate, because the shallow victories that we benefit locally, in the long term, it would be, what does the United States of America stand for? And it's hard to put that on a ballot.
Representative Rangel, this has been an interesting time the last month. It was very clear that when Nancy Pelosi became Speaker of the House again in 2017, that she did not want to impeach President Trump. We went through the Mueller report, we went through the emoluments clause, we went through all that, and her philosophy was, we'll beat him at the polls, let's not do this, let's keep away from this. Then about a month ago, the Ukraine phone call became a situation. Why did that become the point and the thing where Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in the House could no longer not start an impeachment inquiry?
I think it's safe to interpret what you've just said. Was the Speaker, it wasn't a question of whether she wanted President Trump to be impeached, but she did not want the House of Representatives to take any political action that would lead toward impeachment. And her thinking was strictly political. One, we had gained a lot of seats from congressional districts that basically were Republican. And it was the individual member, Democratic member, running for the House of Representatives that so influenced their voters, wherever they came from, to be voted on. And it had nothing to do, in certain cases, with Trump, except that they wanted a change. The Speaker was concerned as to whether or not these new freshman members felt secure enough to vote against the President of the United States and to politically withstand all that it meant to challenge the President. The second and most important thing, however, is the state of the nation. Speaker Pelosi had hoped that by continuing the investigation, which we did not need a House resolution to do, the Constitution gave the House of Representatives the power to instigate an inquiry as to the conduct of the president and to determine not whether he was innocent or guilty, but to determine whether there was enough evidence to send the case to finally be decided in the Senate. If we just had the votes to do that, and the American people thought that this was just being done politically, it would so divide the American people that no matter which way the Senate decided or which way the 2020 elections would go, you would find two Americas, one supporting Trump, believing that he was railroaded out of office, and the other hating him for what they think he's done to the United States. When it reached the point that the evidence as related to Ukraine was piling up, where the speaker had to make a decision that was not political, and that is, how far can a president go and not explain whether or not his behavior was constitutional? Should the House of Representatives be more concerned with their ability to get reelected or their ability to put into check any president that says, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and not be charged with a crime? And when this starts building up to such an extent, then one of the most important decisions that a person has to make is whether my reelection as a member of Congress is more important than saying we got to have checks on the executive branch, and those checks should be an investigation by the House and a trial by the Senate. And so I agreed with Nancy Pelosi. There was no need for us to have to take a resolution to vote that we would have jurisdiction to move forward with a investigation to determine the question of impeachment. That's in the Constitution. It goes unchallenged. But because we wanted to make certain that as many Republicans as possible would be able to have public hearings to answer to their constituents, and even more important than that, the impeachment of Nixon was really the beginning of the era of Television for America. And a lot of people believe that even though the subject matter wasn't pleasant, it opened up a historic part of our constitutional basis that Americans learned more about their country through the Nixon impeachment than they ever did in college or high school. So, regardless of the political fallout, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to hear testimony, and the real question is going to be, can a president of the United States use their inherent political authority to withhold friends from an ally, a trusted ally, in order to coerce them into conducting an investigation for the American president's political well-being? There is no question that is wrong. The question is going to be whether, and there is no question he will be impeached. Impeachment does not mean you found guilty. Impeachment is the same thing as a grand jury. Probable cause that he did do it. The president will be able to bring his defense to the Senate. The justice of the Supreme Court will be in charge of the trial, that is, will preside, rather. And there will be House prosecutors and defenders. And this will be a process that is far more important than Donald Trump.
Representative Rangel, this brings into question a much bigger question, and we'll kind of lay it out here. I've talked to Eleanor Cliff, I've talked to Sam Donaldson, who I consider to be respectable journalists, and the feeling is, and also some people in Washington, is that what you just said is exactly right. There's no doubt that because the Democrats have control of the House, and some Republicans might vote with them, although we're not sure about that yet, that at the end of this inquiry, President Trump will be impeached. Now, the thought is that they want to get this done before the end of the year, because next year's an election year. The Iowa caucuses are coming in January. That doesn't mean anything to Trump right now, but it does for the Democrats. That being said, is there any chance in an election year, which is where the trial would be held in the Senate, the time the trial would be held in the Senate, if that dominates the news cycle, which I assume the Senate trial of the impeachment of the president is going to dominate the election primary of the Democrats, at the end, does President Trump get removed? Is there any scenario where the Republicans in the Senate do that?
Based on what we know, it's hard for me to see that that could happen. But if you may not know, but history would recall that almost the same feelings about President Nixon existed when I sat on that Judiciary Committee. And we had Republicans that made it abundantly clear that they didn't care what we did in the House, that they would be supporting the president, because they knew that Goldwater, Senator Goldwater, and the Republicans were going to acquit President Nixon. And then what happened? We found out about an electronic hearing system. We heard the president's voice. We heard about what they called the smoking gun. And overnight, in August of 1974, Republican senators say, nope, we cannot go any further in our support of the president because of the recent information that has been publicly revealed. And they went to the White House before the House of Representatives, before we voted for impeachment. And they told President Nixon that he had no support in the Senate. And so what did the president do? He quit. He just quit and said, I am not going through this. So that's a long answer to your question, but it means the inquiry is not over. We have no idea what these public servants are prepared to testify. God knows there's even information that we're not talking about that was in the Mueller report. We don't know what role Giuliani and the other two people that have been arrested and they are standing trial in the Southern District. We have no idea of some of the things that the president's many, many lawyers, especially Cohen, who's locked up in jail, may want to talk about when they find out that the president is not as politically strong as he once was. And so, whatever happens between now and impeachment or now and the election, it means what is going to be revealed. As you asked the question, we have not had public hearings. And we expect that this week or next week, for the first time, America will be able to look beyond the closed doors and reach their own interpretation as to whether or not this president, one, should remain in office, or two, should be voted in or out of office. What a great country to be able to have that choice.
Representative Rangel, this beckons an interesting question, because there are parallels with Richard Nixon, and you were there during the days of Richard Nixon. But two places it doesn't parallel, and you tell me how much these two things factor into this particular case, even once we have the public hearings. One of the things is, Nixon was already into his second term by the time this happened, when he was going to be impeached. This is an election year where Donald Trump is their candidate, and this would leave them with very little time, less than 11 months, to find a new candidate and run him against whoever the Democrat is. That's different than Nixon. And maybe the bigger problem, the bigger difference between Trump and Nixon is Nixon only needed to be pardoned for one crime if he left office to go live scot-free for the rest of his life. The Southern District of New York, which is an unpardonable crime by the next president, is already investigating President Trump pretty heavily. The president can't pardon that, the next president. So if Donald Trump would resign because the Senate came to him and said, you can't do this, his kids and himself, I think, are going to be in some serious legal, possibly prison jeopardy that Nixon wasn't. How do those things factor in?
Well, let me take the second question. First of all, it never entered our mind that Vice President Ford would actually pardon President Nixon after he quit office. The second thing is that as kind as people are, when they hear the facts as to what people have done as a criminal nature, whether or not local and state prosecutors would take those cases up, I don't really think people are going to go to sleep at night wondering what's going to happen to the president if indeed he is dismissed from office. But you are 100% right. Nixon was popular as he began his second term, and this president now is going into an election dealing with his second term. So Americans and the voters have to first decide, through letting their senators and House of Representatives people know, that I really believe that the President of the United States' behavior was in violation of the Constitution. And that it has to be decided, no matter what the subsequent election results are going to be. You cannot go through an impeachment wondering what happens if he's impeached and convicted and thrown out of office. So you bet your life it's not an easy political question. But there's no way to resolve that on the question of impeachment. Impeachment stands alone in the Constitution, and the four-year election stands alone in the Constitution. And it's unfortunate that these two come close together in terms of a time. But I don't really think that the senators will be able to, on their own, decide whether they're going to convict or not convict based on the election. But one thing that will influence them, and that's their re-election. And the people will be heard on that re-election. The people against Nixon turned overnight when they found out the full story on the smoking gun. And we haven't begun to have anything publicly on President Donald Trump yet.
Representative Rangel, I think you're exactly right. I think the House and the Senate could change on a dime. We don't know what we're going to see. I guess my question was more indirect to the man. When the senators went over, the Republican senators went over and saw Nixon and said, you don't have support in the Republican Senate anymore, Nixon deciding to resign was, okay, was there a pardon deal worked out? We'll never know. A lot of people said no. A lot of people said yes. But he had a chance to get off from this crime. If the senators go over, the Republican senators go over to President Trump, not only would he have to be pardoned for this whole Ukraine thing, which could happen, who knows, but he's got problems in the Southern District. He's got problems in Florida. He's got legal issues that pertain to a lot of things. He might not be so apt, the man, to resign as Nixon was. What do you think?
Well, as a former federal prosecutor who served in the Southern District, and knowing the thinking of a lot of prosecutors when there is a case being investigated, it is not unusual for the office not to prosecute in view of the severe penalties that a defendant may have already received for similar offenses, even though in different jurisdictions. So I cannot say what the Attorney General would permit, what the U.S. Attorney in the Southern District will permit, and I might add what the Attorney General in New York State might permit, because Governor Cuomo has closed up some of our laws that prevent certain charges from being called double jeopardy. So you do have a real question, and that is, if a president wants to leave office, should they be thinking about subsequent charges at local and state jurisdiction? The answer is yes, but I cannot think of anyone that could say how that would be resolved, except it really would be a difficult question that would have to be studied, not just in terms of Trump, but what does it do for jurisprudence for the country, even though the decision is being made on a local level. A very serious question.
It really is. And Representative Rangel, being in New York for a lot of these years, you know President Trump. He's been there for a long time. You know former Mayor Giuliani. He's been there for a long time. Who are these people? The trouble they're getting in now, does it surprise you?
Holy mackerel. My God, yes. I can't find words to tell you. I knew and met and talked with Donald Trump. I knew he had a very large ego and thought then, as he does now, that he was the smartest man in the world. But I kind of thought I met people like this in the Army and in school, and they didn't bother anybody, and so you just left them alone. I had never dreamed that the system was so weak that a person with Donald Trump's personality could become president. I never thought that could happen. And so, and then with Rudolph Giuliani, the Southern District of New York, when I was a member in the 60s, had a reputation as being the most successful professional district in the federal U.S. attorney system, which meant what? It meant it would bring out the best of most U.S. attorneys, regardless of what their party label was. I served under Robert Morgenthau, who recently passed away, that Republicans and Democrats said that he served this country so well. And with all of the political problems I've had with Giuliani, I really thought that routing out international crime and going after the drug dealers and being there looking sober after 9/11, I never thought that I would see the personality that's been revealed as a result of his relationship with Trump. So what can I tell you? You never know.
Representative Rangel, we have about 6 minutes left here, and I always appreciate these conversations because I think they're thoughtful and interesting and do help the listener. But I want to spend the last 6 minutes on your party. We are headed into the primary season in less than 60 days. Vice President Biden is there. Elizabeth Warren is there. Bernie Sanders is there. Beto's gone as of last week. We still have Buttigieg. What have you made of the Republican primary season, and do you feel any of those candidates should feel confident at this point?
Well, I wish you didn't ask me that. I really do. I want so badly to be able to say that compared to Trump, any of our candidates can and should win. But, God, I really hope that we could get a candidate that just represented America at a time that we needed someone to alleviate the depth of partisanship that exists. I haven't seen that person or heard of that person. And I don't know whether it's too late for that person to come forward. But if a person really... I tend to find that Biden would be able to get my support because he seems more likely to win. But with all of the great orators and statesmen and politicians we have in America, I don't like hearing my politicians making mistakes and stumbling and moving forward. And I'm 89 years old, so I'm very kind to the aged, but when it comes to being president, I want the best for my country out there. And I'm not that excited at this point in time.
Representative Rangel, a friend of yours, another person who resides in New York State, Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State, former First Lady. I don't think anybody on the planet doesn't know who Hillary Clinton is. She's been a lot more front and center the last few weeks. She's very vocal on impeachment. She's very vocal against the president, calling him names. There are all kinds of conspiracy theorists who believe that she wants another shot at this, that the last election was so devastating, that the Russian interference hurt her so bad. Is there ever a door for this woman again with the Democratic field being what you just described it as?
I know Hillary Clinton. She's a wonderful person, and I refuse to believe that she harbors any ambitions for another run for president. And quite frankly, I haven't heard that, and I don't expect that I will.
What do you make in the last few minutes here, Representative, of your party's move toward the left, as they call it, toward Medicare for all, toward free college? Is that the right way to go? Can that win nationally?
I think that these are things that I'll country should have been invested in over the years. I really believe that an educated and healthy country is far more important to our national security than investments that we have made not only to our military, but to our stationing of military people in harm's way without constitutional authority. And so the question has to be, how do you pay for it? And can you convince people that with the deficit that we do have and the national debt, just paying the interest on what we owe to other people, does that balance with the investment we're making in people's health and education? And this has to be sold to people. Quite frankly, having been one of the initiators with the Obamacare, it would be my initial feelings that we didn't do all that we wish we could have done with Obamacare, and that the public option, if we had the votes, should have been the direction that we're going. But it just seems to me that if we have something, we shouldn't jeopardize it. As it relates to eliminating the private insurance companies altogether, I think you can do that once you establish and broaden the benefits under Medicare, that people like me who have private insurance would be best to determine which policy would be better for us. And I don't think you have to fill it all out and start all over. I think we made great inroads in people appreciating the value of health insurance, and that shows the quick support that Obama got for Obamacare when we were starting it. People were getting defeated just for calling it that. So the jury's out. The candidates are out. It's being debated. And I join with millions of Americans. I'm listening to the debate.
Representative Charles Rangel, we cannot thank him enough for joining us 1971 through 2017. He served. It's always a fascinating conversation. I can't thank you enough for coming on Election Eve, and I hope we talk again very soon because there's going to be a lot to talk about, I think, as we head into the holiday season.
Thank you for thinking of me. Have a great day and a better election.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Representative Charles Rangel. Very interesting opinions, and that's what we do here, all opinions. Adam, mid-morning coffee break with Adam Lepp will be on next, and then we have Voice of a People with Linda Sims at 4:10 today and the Mike Wilson Show at 5:10. Come back tomorrow morning, 8:10 until 10 a.m. It will be Election Day. Stay tuned.
To be in Iraq, period.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.gh1071.com.